While they're making their way down, everybody can turn their Bibles to Genesis chapter 22. We'll be back in Hebrews 11 here in just a few minutes. We're going to start out in Genesis 22 today. It's my pleasure to be back here with you. I appreciate your prayers while I've been out of the country. I was literally in a spot to where if I went 100 miles to the west, I'd be heading home. If I moved 100 miles to the east, I'd be heading home. It'd be exact opposite point on the earth. So right now it feels like 1 a.m. to me. Had a 16-hour flight yesterday and then 9-hour layover and then another flight into Lexington. But I'm just glad to be home. Got a couple pictures for you I'm going to share more tonight. I'll also get in a little more into the Word, this passage tonight. But here's a picture of the crowd outside the tent. If you can imagine the tent that we had to gather people in there, imagine four of Marshall's football fields under a canopy. That's how big it was. And this is how many people were outside of the canopy. The best guess they had under the canopy was approximately 172,000 people under the tent. And that's how many people were piled up outside of it, just wanting to hear the Word of God. Standing out in the sun all day. It was just absolutely incredible. And then not just the people down on the plains, but you can see the people up on the hillside just trying to look in there. That's the picture of all the people filing out. You probably can't tell close, but if you look out that, you can see all the bodies outside. That's all the people you saw outside the tent waiting to get in. That's a treehouse that they have. And that's for you if you're in the area in the rice paddies and the elephant herd comes running through. You go up and you just stay in the treehouse till the elephants go away. Not typically a problem we have in Wayne County, right? So I went up there. I entrusted my life to the Garo Engineering up on the hill. It was fine till the wind came, and then it was an act of faith. But I'll share a little bit more just what's going on there this evening. So it was an incredible time. So as we start out today, I'd like you to think for a moment. I'll just admit that I'm a bit of a Star Wars nerd. And one of my favorite scenes in all 25 movies that they have now or whatever is in Empire Strikes Back. It's really the climax of the entire series. When Darth Vader is reaching out to Luke and say, take my hand, you're my son. No, it's not true. And he says, join me and fulfill your destiny. We'll destroy the Emperor together, right? And so we like this, and then the music comes in. Da-dum, dum, da-dum, dum. And all that music behind it gives you this sense of something's driving the story, right? I mean, everything that you watch, the climax of every Star Wars is that there's this force driving the story forward as if the players involved have a destiny to which the force has called them, right? And we like that idea in the movies, but then if I talk to you about the destiny of your life or something is destined for you or you have a destiny, Americans get a little, we get a little put off of that. We don't like the idea of God's destined plan for your life. Now, if somebody just says to you that God has a plan for your life, then, oh, yeah, I like that. But why do we feel more comfortable with the idea of God having a plan for us versus God having a destiny? I'll ask that again. Why do we feel more comfortable with saying God has a wonderful plan for our lives versus God has a destiny for your life? Why is that? Now you're just looking at me like I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's what it's about, is when we hear destiny, it's like I'm out of control. I mean, it's one thing to have a plan, but plans change. But when we talk about God having a destiny for our lives, that takes us back a little bit. Because we would rather, there's something in us that would rather have a little bit of that control than to entrust our destiny over to Christ. But here's the question I want you to ask this morning. I just want you to be thinking about this. What are you destined to do? Now, for most Americans, we want to say nothing. But I'll ask you again, what are you destined to do? To say it again another way, why did God place you here on this earth? And what role do you have in fulfilling that purpose. You see, a lot of times we are comfortable with the idea of God having a plan, but we have free will. But what I'm here to share with you this morning is God does have a destiny for you, but at the same time, your faith as a result of that destiny gives you a choice. Faith chooses to fulfill God's destiny for you. And so, and really, most of the debate in theological circles today, especially with those who take the Bible seriously, is which is greater, God's destined plan for you or your ability to make choices. And so what they want to do is put you into a box. Get in this box. It's all about God's destiny. We have no free will. Or get in this box. It's 100% free will. And God just lets us do whatever we want to do. But the reality of it is, my friends, listen, the Bible teaches both. And where we get stuck is, well, which is it? It can't be one or the other. To which God says, yes, it can. Somehow God has a destiny for our lives, but we still choose it. We're going to see that here in just a moment. We'll start out in Genesis 22. I'll read through that, but let me give you a little background. Abraham is one of the most famous men in the history of the world. In fact, we're going to look at three people in the Bible this morning. That two of the three are two of the three most famous people in the history of the world. Okay, Abraham being one, I mean, the Muslims, the Jews, and the Christians all look back to Father Abraham. Very popular person. He lived 4,000 years ago, and we're still talking about him and promises that God made to him. Then we're going to look at a guy named Moses. He was one of the leaders of the nation of Egypt, the prince of Egypt at one time, in line possibly to be the Pharaoh himself, the most powerful nation in the world. And then we're going to look at a third person, and this might be just a little PG-13, just talking a little real world stuff, but everybody's heard of Moses, everybody's heard of Abraham, but this third person is going to be a woman. Okay? Each of these three people had a destiny. These two men and one woman. And the destiny was so great for the two men that everybody knows who they are. But as for the woman, not so much. Her name is Rahab. Okay? And even to share with you, I mean, around the world, I mean, I had a taxi driver whose name was Moses. Okay? I met another guy whose name was Abraham. All right? I mean, how many of you have a good friend, good female friend, whose name is Rahab? Raise your hand. You ever had anybody, hey, my name's Rahab. Anybody name their daughter that way? I mean, you just don't hear it very often, okay? But God had a destiny for her as well. And we'll end out back on her. Let's start out with Abraham. God calls him in Genesis chapter 12 to go to the land he will show you, this promised land for him and his descendants. And through Abraham's seed, singular, through Abraham's offspring, God had a destiny. That's what he says. I have a destiny for you, Abraham. I'm going to make your name great. You go to this land, I'll show you, and through your seed, your offspring, I'm going to save the entire world. No pressure or anything, right? That your child is going to save the entire world. And so the Bible tells us this, that Abraham believed these things, he believed God, and God credited it to him as righteousness. It wasn't that Abraham was righteous. It's that Abraham believed God, and God put righteousness in his account. It was because of his faith that God credited him as righteousness. Sometimes people ask, well, how were people saved in the Old Testament as compared to the New? The same way we're saved today. It's through faith. And God sees our faith in him, trusting in him, trusting in what has been revealed to us, and we place that faith in God's plan, and as a response to that faith, we live out our righteousness. So we see Abraham doing that here in Genesis chapter 22. It says, after these things, after God's called him, a lot of stuff's going on in his life. There's been some family turmoil. But now young Isaac, who was born to him in very late in an age, he's grown up to be a young teenager. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And he said, here I am. Take your son, your only son, Isaac, and then they have this little phrase here, whom you love. It's not just some distant relationship. This is the son of his old age. This was his only shot. He's not having any more kids. The first one, just to have him was a miracle. He says, and I want you to go to the land of Moriah. This is the land of Jerusalem. Some of us will be there about a month from today. He says, and I want you to offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I should tell you. Now, Abraham didn't have the luxury of having a Bible. He didn't know what kind of God he served. In fact, the region he was from there in the Persian Gulf, they worship the moon god. If you ever see a crescent moon with a symbol of like a star in the middle, that's usually a sign of the god of the darkness that would demand his worshipers sacrifice their firstborn son to him. So this wouldn't have been that odd to Abraham. He would have thought, well, my god must be just like these other gods that everybody from my hometown worships. So I'll go and I'll sacrifice my son. And this land we show you, the region of Moriah, is eventually the place of Jerusalem. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, two servants, and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering and rose and went to the place which God had told him. And on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place, the mountaintop from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey. He's not even going to bring them to watch about ready what's about to happen next. He says, I and the boy will go over there, pointing to the top of the mountain, and worship. Now, this is the first time, just a little side note, that we see the word worship in the Bible. The word worship is an English word that's condensed, that comes from two words, worth-ship. This is what, when you offer, when you give something, it's like a ship going out to sail. When you give something to God, it shows him what you think of him, his worth. That's what worship is. True worship is costly, his worth-ship. And what he sees is, my God, this God in whom I have placed my trust, my faith, I trust him so much that I'm going to put my faith in him and this child that I have, I'm going to trust in this. When I worship him, something's going to happen. Watch the second part of this verse. We're going to worship and then we're going to come back again to you. The two of us are going to come back. Somehow God's going to work this out, that even if I kill my child, I'm bringing my son back with me because I know my destiny. I know what God's called me. He said, through my offspring, and this is the only offspring I got that can do this. He's already promised me, through Isaac, the Savior of the world's going to come. Through my offspring, the whole world's going to be blessed. So what God must be saying is, if I kill him, he's going to bring him back to life. Now, some of you look at that and you're like, man, that's kind of a quantum leap, is it not? Well, that's faith. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and he laid it on Isaac, his son. Like to carry it up the hill. And he took his hand, the fire and the knife, so that both of them went together. Now, Isaac starts putting two and two together. Isaac says to his father, Abraham, he says, Dad? He says, here I am, son. He says, now look, we got the fire. I got the wood. But where's the lamb for the burnt offering? We don't have a sacrifice. Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. My son. So they went both of them together, man. And this is a great act of faith on Isaac's part as well. Like, how's this all going to work out? Now, when they came to the place in which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and then bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. At this point, Isaac's got to be getting it. My daddy's going to kill me. Now, I remember as I got to be when I was a young man, I was 17 years old. I wasn't as strong as my dad. I'm probably still not as strong as my dad. All right. He's this big athlete and we work out all the time. I probably couldn't take him even now. Could I, Mike? Not, Mike, give me a little chance. Mike's like, no chance. All right. So probably couldn't do it. But the thing I had with dad is when he would get mad at me, I would say that to him then, you know what? I'm not stronger than you, but I'm faster than you. And that's the main thing. As long as you can run away, you're going to be okay, right? From a good fight. And so that's the thing I think about Isaac here. This was faith on his part because the man was old. There's no way Isaac couldn't run away. But yet he allows his dad to place him up on the altar. And then this takes a big act of faith. So I'm going to ask Dakota if he'll come up here, please. Dakota, come on up here on the stage. I'm going to ask Dakota. Dakota, have I ever done a trust fall with you before? Do you still trust me? We'll see. All right, so come on up here. It's been a long time. He was probably 15, 14 when we did this. I'm going to step you over to the side. We're going to do a trust fall here. And what the trust fall is I just have you put your feet together and don't look back, okay? I'm going to use you as a sermon illustration. Nobody's ever going to forget what's about to happen to you, all right? So I just want you to look up there, Jake Dorsey. Wave at him, Jake. Can you see him? Keep your eyes on Jake, all right? And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to count to three, Dakota, and you're not going to move your feet, and you're going to stay stiff as a board, but you're going to fall backwards, and I'm going to catch you. You understand? All right, one, don't move those feet. two, three. Go. Oh, you almost did it. You moved your foot. Now, why'd you move that foot, Dakota? Why don't you keep your feet together?
I fell farther than what I thought I was going to.
There you go. There for a moment. It was going further than what you thought. You weren't quite sure. But I'm just telling you, Dakota, I just caught you. We're going to do it again. And this time you're not going to move those feet, all right? No matter what, I'm going to catch you. You can't move those feet. Everybody's watching. 10 million people are watching online. All right, you ready? All right, one, two, three. There we go. Good job. All right, everybody give it up for Dakota. It's an act of faith. Now, here's why it's hard. Here's why he dropped that foot, even though I'd caught him before. Because this is an element of faith that sometimes we don't understand. Especially when we first choose that faith. When you're dropping back like that. I mean, if I was really brave, I'd have Jake drop off the balcony. All right? There was a day when I would have done that. Okay. But there's an element of when you start going back, there's a point at which you just have to let go and you are not in control. That's what caused him to go, whoop, I want control. But at that point, it was too late anyway. That's what faith is. Listen, faith, by its very nature, has an element of doubt. Otherwise, it doesn't take faith to do what faith calls you to do. Do you understand what I'm saying? If there's no doubt, it doesn't take some faith. No matter how many proofs, like my friend Isaac over there does a great job teaching apologetics class, all right? But at some point, Isaac, we just have to have faith. It can't be 100% proven to us that all of this is true. We can make a lot of sense of a lot of things, but at some point we have to believe that the story handed down to us through the ages has been delivered accurately. And so Abraham's facing this test of faith right now. So he reaches out his hand, he takes the knife to slaughter his son. And then the angel Lord, right when he's about to strike, the angel Lord calls to him from heaven and says, Abraham, Abraham. And he says, here I am. He said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Mommy and daddies, I want you to think about that right now. Not that we serve a God who calls you to kill your children, but do you trust your God with your children's lives? God hit me with this yesterday. I went up to, I had that 9-hour layover in New York. And I'm just sitting there and I thought, man, 9 hours. I'm going to jump on the transit and just go see my son Titus. Hop over into Manhattan. So I go to see him and I talk to him. And a lot of you I had praying for this. I'm going to be on the borderline of bragging here a little bit, but just bear with me, okay? So he says he's going to law school. He did an entry exam. He knocked it out of the park. I mean, he can go to any school he wants to. Just did really well. And I'm really proud of him. And he's telling me this semester what he's doing and school clubs he's involved in. And I even asked him. I said, you know, son, did you put on your law school applications what your big dreams are? Dream big. Don't dream small. They don't want small thinkers. They want big dreamers. And he said, no, I don't want them to think I'm crazy. And I'm like, no, really, if you could do anything that you wanted to do, what would it be, you know, if God could put you in a spot? And he said, well, I think maybe being a Supreme Court justice for the United States. And I'm like, well, don't set your goals too low, you know. I mean, it's just more presidents than you got of the Supreme Court people appointed so often. So, you know, I said, you know what, Titus, if that's what God has for you, great. But I just want to share this to you. I want to make sure you understand, Titus. I don't want you to go to law school because I want you to go to law school. If you don't want to go to law school, I don't want you to go to law school. But there's a big part of me that doesn't want you to go to law school because I see a lot of times what happens to lawyers when they get out in the business. And if you want to just go and do something else and be in a town of 3,000 like your dad has for 20 years of your life, man, I just want you to do what God has called you to do. And so as I'm pulling away from there and I'm looking back at that big skyline and there's my son doing his thing, I'm just thinking about it. You know, what if God called him to something that the world says was small? What if it's the opposite end of the spectrum? Or worse yet, I even thought about this. What would I think if I woke up in the morning and someone called me and said, while Titus was out helping the homeless or walking to church to be in the praise band, he was killed. What if he called me today and said, Dad, you know over where you were and there's that village that's a little dangerous that they wouldn't even take you? Yeah. I think God's calling me to go there. What would I say then? See, I remember just, it wasn't that long ago, 10, 15 years ago when I was working in youth ministry. And over a period of about 10 years, we had 50 students commit to do at least a summer of full-time mission work. And some of them went into some sketchy places. And I just want to ask you a question. When we started sending the kids out on the mission field, where do you think I got more pushback? About two-thirds of our kids didn't have parents that went to this church, and a third did. How many of the non-Christian parents do you think said to their kids, I'm not going to let you go do what you think you need to do? You know what? I never had one non-Christian forbid their kid from going to the field. But I had a number of people in this church say, I don't know if this is safe. I don't know what I want. I got plans for my kids. My kids got a destiny. I want them to go here. I want my kid to go to this school. I don't want them to go into full-time ministry. I don't know if I'm ready to let my kid go on this mission trip. I'm not sure if we're going to be safe. Can I do? I heard it all from people who went from this church. God's not asking you to necessarily sacrifice and kill your child, but can you let them go for a week? And some parents are like, oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about the people in charge or whatever. How often we say we're people of faith, but our kids saying, well, let's just pull in the reins a little bit. Let's temper that faith just a little bit. And that's what this passage is about here in Hebrews chapter 11. Faith by its very nature is the fuel that keeps us focused towards the future. That's what faith is. It is future focused. It's not present is certainly not the past focused. The devil says, focus on the day. The devil says, live your life in fear. God says, live your life with hope and faith for tomorrow. Trust in his calling. Lean not on your own understanding. So this is why the writer of Hebrews explains it is by faith when Abraham was tested. He offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac your offspring be named. Got all the potential in the world. I mean, it's one thing I look at Titus and potential there and my other kids and look at their potential. This had the potential of being the savior of the world coming through this son. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, the writer of Hebrews says, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. You give your child to God, God's going to give him back. And even if they die in the act of living out their faith, God will give them back to you in the resurrection for all eternity. Can you not just give them up for a little time so that God can have them forever? And listen, the greatest detractor to kids' faith is lukewarm mommies and daddies. And how often I see it, a kid, 15, 16 year old, I want to serve Jesus, I want to serve Jesus, I want to serve Jesus. And mommy and daddy say, well, you know, I got my own plans for your life. I'm the one that's listening to the Holy Spirit here, not you. Told all my kids from 13, 14 years old, if I see you serving God faithfully in this town, I'm open to God calling you to serve faithfully in any town in the world, even if your life is in danger. That, my friends, is faith. And then by faith, when Isaac grows up, what does he do? He invokes future blessings on his sons, Jacob and Esau. And by faith, Jacob, when dying, his last breath, he blesses the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. And then by faith, Joseph, when he grows up, at the end of his life, he made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave direction concerning his bones. What's he saying? When he died there in Egypt, he says, whatever you do, don't leave me here. God made us a promise, and by faith, I don't want to be buried in Egypt. By faith, someday, we're going to get out of here. And even though it was 400 years later, they took eventually Joseph's bones back to the promised land. He trusted in God's promise. And the reason that Joseph stayed faithful and promised his promises to God is because he saw it lived out in his daddy Jacob's life. And the reason Jacob was able to do it is because he saw it lived out in his daddy Isaac's life. And the reason Isaac was able to do it is because Abraham one day raised the knife over his own son. And it was passed down generation to generation to generation. My friends, do you want to have a family like that? Do you want to have a family where you're just going to turn your kids loose to be out agents of faith throughout the world? Or you just want them to grow up and get a little job here in the United States, have a two-car garage, and be happy? God has a destiny for you and your family. But you must have faith to receive it. By faith, Moses, when he was born, look at this. He was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw the child was beautiful. The word here for beautiful is God's beautiful, beautiful in God's eyes. And they were not afraid of the king's edict. What was the king's edict? Was we're going to kill all the boys because we don't want the Jews to raise up an army. And they were like, I don't care what the government says. We're going to be future focused. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, after knowing the faith of his parents, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing, notice what I said earlier, Moses had a destiny, but yet in faith he still had to do what? Choose. Do you see that, church? God had a destiny from him from the time he was born, but he still had to choose to act on his faith, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. Man, isn't that a great joy? What he's saying is, I know the riches of the world, but I'm ready to leave all that just so I can follow Jesus, follow the calling of God in my life. I'd rather be with God's people than to be with the rich, ungodly people. Verse 26, he says, he considered the reproach of Christ. What is the reproach of Christ? It's someone living in luxury in heaven to go to live among the poor. He says, I want that greater than the greater wealth of the treasures of Egypt. Why? What was it that motivated him to say, bye-bye, Pharaoh. I don't want anything else to do with this Egyptian dream. And I want to follow God's destiny for my life. What drove him to do that? His faith was looking forward to the reward he would receive in heaven. This is something we talked about a few weeks ago. When we talk about Judgment Day, Christians don't look at Judgment Day like it's a bad thing. I look forward to it. I want to stand before God. And I know I've made mistakes. And Jesus shouldn't have done this. And these were careless words. But when it comes right down to it, I want him to say to me, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into thy master's happiness and then serve him for 1,000 years to come. He was looking for the reward. That's what got him up and that's what got him out. The reward. Faith looks for the future. Good investors choose tomorrow over today. Good students choose what's good for their tomorrow instead of what they want to do today. Good businesses invest for tomorrow instead of worrying about today. Good governments choose to invest in our future instead of worrying about, I probably shouldn't go into that right now. Listen, faith allows us to endure whatever we're going through today for the sake of tomorrow. That's what faith is. You overcome whatever obstacles are in your way because your faith is the fuel that keeps you focused forward. I can't believe I just said that, all those things without tongue tied. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. By faith, Moses left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king. Do you see that again? Not being afraid, not being afraid, not being afraid. For he endured as seeing him who's invisible. I can see the king, but I'm trusted in God. That's faith. By faith, he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn may not touch them. And by faith, watch this, the people crossed the Red Sea as on dry land. Now, this is what the Bible tells us. There was a wall of water on each side. What was it that propelled them to walk across the Red Sea, knowing that any time that water could come down on them? It wasn't what was behind them. It was what was before them. The land that was promised to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. That's what got them up and got them across. But the Egyptians who didn't have faith, when they attempted the same, they were drowned. And then he goes on to the story of what happened when they got to the other side. Now, this is where I want to hunker down just a little bit. I want you to follow me here. This is the last point I have, but it's the big one. It's bigger than what I've even talked about to this point. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down. Now, what were the walls of Jericho? These were these huge walls, about as tall as this church, about as thick as three of our brick walls. Most fortified city in the ancient Near East. And the Jewish people were over in the promised land. They're like, man, in order for us to go over into Canaan land, we're going to have to take Jericho. It's right across the river from the Jordan. And they're like, how are we going to do this? And God said, just march around it in faith for 7 days and I'll knock those walls down. And it happened. Now, right before they got there, let me just set up the story. Instead of me going to have you look up the whole thing. Joshua sent a couple spies into Jericho. They snuck in one day. And while they're in there, they meet a prostitute. Two young men meet a prostitute, and she invites them to her room. Now, what do you think she's inviting them to the room for? This is what she does every day. This is her job. So as they're making her way to her room, they start asking her questions about the city and the security and what it looks like and all that stuff. And at some point, it begins to connect that these guys are spies. And then the word gets out in the city because they've been going around trying to find information that there were two Israelite spies in the city. And so there's this mad search going on. So Rahab, the prostitute, takes them to her room and she hides them so the authorities can't find them. And while they're doing the search, they even come there and they question Rahab. We hear you've had these two guys. She says, I don't have them anymore. She just lies. And then they come back and they say to her, let me tell you the story of God and what God's done. And listen, all that Rahab had was their story and what she had heard had happened with the Israelites when they came through the Red Sea. That's all that she didn't have a Bible. She didn't have a preacher. She didn't have anything else. She'd been raised in this town of Jericho her entire life with all her friends that she'd been raised with. And now these two guys come in that she's known for maybe 10 to 15 minutes. And they start telling her about how God has promised them this land. And something happens at that moment to where Rahab says, I'm going to side with these two strangers instead of the people I've known my entire life. Now, I want you to just think about that. Imagine two Middle Eastern guys coming to Canova and saying, we're going to blow this whole place up. And everybody you know, CK or Buffalo, that's gone to school with you all these years, all right? Everybody you've known, they're all going to die. God's given us this city. And for you in that moment to say, you know what? I'm going to side with these two guys when all you got to do is yell, police, and they're dead. And yet this is what the Bible says. Watch. Verse 31. By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient. When the Israelites did come in, they wiped out everybody except her family because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. My question to you is this. Don't miss this. We just read the story and we go on. Listen. What caused Rahab to believe the stories of the crossing of the Red Sea? What caused Rahab to have the faith to believe these two strange men that just moments before she thought it was going to be a quick hookup, okay? What caused her to make a switch on a dime and say, I'm going to place all my family's future and my personal future and everybody else's future that is related to me, I'm going to put them all in the hands of these two young men? What caused her to do it? Where did she get that faith? It makes no sense. I'll tell you where she got it. God put it in her. That's all she had. Is God put that faith in her? It didn't make any sense. In the same way, why is Abraham raising a knife? What has God ever given him to this point other than saying that he's going to have the land? He doesn't have it yet. Why is he going to take that step of faith? Why did he leave his family to start with? Because God put that faith in him. Why did Moses say, bye-bye, Pharaoh. I'm going to go over here and live with the peasants and live in the desert for the next 80 years. Why was Moses have the faith to do that? Because God put it in him. Do you understand? And what I'm here to share with you this morning, if you really think about it, us placing our faith in a story of 11 peasants who told the story that a guy died on the cross and he rose from the grave and nobody can find the body anywhere. And clearly the guy was dead, but couldn't the body have been hidden? I mean, are you placing your eternal destiny and following all the rules of life in this Bible based on the story of 11 peasants? Why would you ever believe such a thing? And my answer to you is because God put it in you. God gave you that faith. God gave it to you. Why am I sitting in a nation of 1.2 billion people last week? And I'm in Delhi and I'm watching these people just worshiping these things that look like elephants and they're falling before it. But somehow God redeemed millions of people out of the Northeast because Baptist missionaries came in 150 years ago and started sharing the gospel with them. Why did those people believe and the people in Delhi didn't? I'll tell you why. Because of those people in that area, God put faith in them. And the only reason that you are a follower of Christ today is not because you're smarter, not because it makes more sense. It's only because God put it in you. Do you get that? You're banking everything on an empty tomb. Why? Because God put it in you. Now, if God put that in you, I want you to tell somebody next to me, I believe it because God put it in me. Tell somebody, God put it in me. God put it in me. That's the only reason I got it. God put it in me. Now, listen, I'm not saying that there's not reason to our faith, but faith by its very definition begins with overcoming what? Doubt. And how do you overcome that doubt? It's not that you choose it. It's God chooses you. He puts that faith in you. Then you choose to walk in faith, just like Moses did. Then you choose to walk in faith, just like Abraham did. And then you choose to walk out of prostitution and trust these two guys you've never known because God put that faith in Rahab. And not only that, God had such a destiny for her. Listen to this. What a great end to the story. After she gets married to one of the Jews, and she ends up being the great, 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 great grandmother of Jesus. And in the same way that God put Abraham in Jesus' line, he also put Rahab in Jesus' line. Why? Because God had a destiny from her life from the time she was conceived in her mother's womb. Do you hear that, my friends? And God has that same destiny for all you who have faith. Do you have that faith in you? If so, it's because God put it in you.